Not a month goes by that Fred Jones, John Blanton, and Paul Jones don't get together. Fred is 63, John is 61, and Paul is 59. All three are African American. They grew up on the West Side, and each of them as youngsters faced problems at home. Fred's mother had become homeless, Paul's mother died, and John was a runaway from a chaotic home life. I'd originally planned to meet only with Fred, but he told me Paul and John wanted to join him. They wanted to pay homage to the woman who raised them, a lay Catholic named Mary Widman. She'd created an unusual home on the city's west side. John Blanton, straight from juvenile detention, also known as the Audie home, was the last of the three to arrive at Miss Widman's place. He was 13 years old at the time. It was the spring of 1955.
When I first got there, I met this white woman. Other than being in the court system, I had had no association with white people before, so it was completely different to me.
An outsider who's not in that community would probably say, yeah, what are you doing living in a house with a bunch of white women? But inside the community, you never felt color. I never felt that Mary Widman was a white woman. You know, I always felt that she was a woman who was placed there to do the work that she was doing for all the people in the community.
When I was in the Audie home, I was used to sitting down with 15 or 20 other young kids my age for breakfast. So it was more like a military type of a situation. This was like a family situation. People had conversations, you know. I was used to not having a lot of conversations, you know, at the table. Matter of fact, we weren't supposed to talk when I was in the Audie home. They wouldn't allow you to talk while you were sitting there eating, you know. Yeah, it's an old three-story Victorian. What were they like maybe six or seven bedrooms?
Yeah, with a ballroom on the top.
With a ballroom on the top floor. And that's where people, you know, we would wake up sometimes in the morning and there'd be a family living up there. They'd be on mattresses and then sleeping bags sleeping up there, you know, or maybe some volunteers passing through town.
We had a room called the Land of Plenty. And in that room, it was all the food, and the people would come from in the neighborhood and get food and clothing. We would provide Christmas baskets and toys.
And we would deliver them to people that needed them.
But one thing that Mary would make you do is to take care of the house. It's a huge house. So in order to keep that house clean, everybody had to do their part. And she had this one word that she used all the time. If you didn't pick up certain things, she said, that's how blight starts in the community. You remember that word, fellas? So we all had a responsibility. We all had to do the stairs, scrub the floor. And if you didn't do it, then you would get demerits. We had a council, and I was the president of the family council. And I operated like a
like a tyrant. For some reason, it always felt as though I was handed out most of the discipline. In terms of being late for curfew, you know, I would always end up that I was just a few minutes after the time. That became a major subject for discussion at the family council meeting. You know, and I mean, after running, you know, maybe a mile, you know, you would think you would get a little credit for that.
We had a fire escape. So John would put the fire escape down so Paul could climb through the window. So he could get in. And so I guess somebody got wise to it, didn't they? You had to go to church.
You know, it was a Catholic institution. We had to get up on Sunday mornings and go to church. And they would be up, dressed halfway out the door, and I would be hiding in a room with the door locked. And she would stand there and bang on the door. I mean, get up now, get dressed, you're going to church. And I would, no, I'm not going. I don't want to go, you know. And she would insist. And eventually, you know, her will would overpower you. You'd have to go.
Schooling was number one. You had to go to school.
We had to do, there was no coming home and throwing the books down and then running out and doing something else. We had to do at least an hour and a half worth of homework every night. Her question when you walked in the door is, where are your books?
Mary Widman, from my perspective, was a very strong-willed kind of person. You know, we took a trip once. You remember the time she got out and redirected traffic in Washington, D.C.? We were apparently lost, and we had gotten misdirected. And she got out and directed traffic so that we could be on the right street. She was about 5 feet, two or,
five,
you know, and kind of frail. You know, I was kind of nervous about using that word, but she commanded that kind of presence.
It's the strangest thing. We would call her Miss Whitman.
Even after we got into our 20s and 30s, I mean, you know, if I saw her today, it would still be Miss Whitman.
Yeah. And yet she wanted us to call her Mary. But we resisted. And we never did call her Mary, you know.
I know people who I saw did call her Mary and didn't have the kind of relationship we had. And I could feel this cringe feeling inside of me. Like, how is it that you feel you deserve to be able to call her Mary? You know, we don't. And we feel that she deserves that kind of respect.
I can remember as a very young kid that I had rheumatic fever, and I was at County Hospital, and Mary would visit me every day and read to me. I stayed out of school for about a year, and she would come and tutor me to make sure that I would catch up. As I look back, I probably ended up on the street probably somewhere. I don't think it would have been pleasant.
Man, I shudder to think of what would have happened to me if I hadn't wound up at the Martin DePore Center. A lot of the people that I knew in Wentworth Gardens are either in jail or died or were shot, you know, were killed. I might have been with them. I might be locked up now. You know, it's a good possibility.
She was, to many of us, the mother. She was our mother. You know, at my wedding, I can remember saying, let's take pictures of the family. And so my mother, my real mother, and I said, well, I want my other mom. I want Mary Whitman, my mother, to come up. So she took a picture the next to my biological mother. And, you know, we all said, this is my family, you know.
I viewed myself as having a family, that it wasn't a foster family. It wasn't that. It was just a family. We define things for ourselves, and we've decided that we're brothers, and that's what's the important thing.
That's how we grew up.
When people ask me, it's hard to really describe it. I just let it go. I say, well, Paul's my brother, Fred's my brother. We all grew up together. And I just leave with it. Because if you went into a thing of trying to explain, you know, the way we grew up, you know, it would be unbelievable.
Paul, John, and Fred Jones, we're brothers, and we'll be brothers forever. And it's just happened to be that way. And I know we wouldn't have been brothers had it not been for Martin DePore's house and Mary Whitman. But we are brothers. We're brothers to the end.
Paul Jones is now a naturopath specializing in holistic forms of therapy. John Blanton is a real estate salesman. And Fred Jones is now the principal at the Grant Elementary School. While Mary Whitman passed away in 1978, the home she created, the Martin DePore's house, will mark its 60th anniversary next year.